This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Mind's Eye.
Slowly come out of the booth and turn around. The woman stepped away to allow Cinder room to maneuver. Behind her, Thorn grunted as a punch collided with his stomach, and he slumped over. Cinder recoiled at the sound, but did as she was told, waiting for her guts to stop churning, for the weakness to pass. She tried to prepare her brain for the attempt, knowing she would only get one more chance at it. She stood from the booth just as they were ratcheting handcuffs around Thorn's wrists. Cinder turned around. From the corner of her eye, she saw the officer reach for her belt. "You don't want to do that," Cinder said, again cringing at the lovely serenity of her own voice. "You want to let us go." The officer paused and stared at her with hollow eyes. "You want to let us go." The command was directed at all the officers, at everyone in the tavern, even the frightened patrons who had pushed themselves against the back wall. Cinder's head buzzed with the return of strength and control and power. "You want to let us go." The female officer dropped her arms to her sides. "We want to let you." A guttural cry ricocheted across the tavern. Beyond the officer, the man with the blue eyes moved to stand, but then collapsed over his table. The table leg snapped from the weight, and he crashed to the floor. The other customers pulled away from him, everyone's attention diverted. Cinder glanced at Thorn, who was watching the spectacle with his hands locked behind his back. The stranger snarled. He was crouching down on all fours, saliva dripping from his mouth. Beneath dark eyebrows, his eyes had taken on an eerie luminescence and a crazed, bloodthirsty expression that twisted Cinder's stomach. He curled his fingers, pulling his nails across the hard floor, and peered up at the terrified faces surrounding him. A growl rolled up from his throat, and his lips curled, revealing teeth that came to a fine point, more canine than human. Cinder pressed herself against the bench, sure her momentary meltdown had fried something, that her optobionics were sending cross messages to her brain. But her vision didn't clear. In unison, the military officers rounded their guns on the man, but he showed no concern. He seemed pleased at the horrified cries, the way the crowd surged away from him. He lunged for the nearest officer before he could pull the trigger. His hands wrapped around the officer's head. A loud snap, and the officer fell lifeless to the ground. It happened so fast, every movement a blur. Screaming filled the tavern. There was a stampede for the door, customers struggling over the crashed tables and chairs. Ignoring the crowd, the man smirked at Cinder. She stumbled back into the booth, trembling. "Hello, little girl," he said, his voice too human-like, too restrained. "I believe my queen has been looking for you." He leaped for her. Cinder pulled back, unable to scream. The female officer jumped between them, facing Cinder, her arms spread out wide in protection, her face completely, entirely blank. Her lifeless eyes peered down at Cinder, even as the man howled with rage and grabbed her from behind. He wrapped one arm around her head, yanking her back and sinking his fangs into her throat. She didn't scream, didn't fight. A bloody gurgle erupted from her mouth. A gun fired. The crazed man roared and picked up the officer, swinging her around like a dog would a toy and tossing her halfway across the tavern. She crumpled to the ground as another shot rang out, catching the man in the shoulder. Bellowing, he whipped forward, snatching the gun away from the remaining officer with one hand. He swiped with the other, his fingers curled into a claw that left four red gashes on the officer's face. Heart hammering, Cinder gaped down at the woman as the life drained out of her eyes. Her gasps stuck in her throat. Her heart was pounding so hard it was sure to break out of her chest. White spots specked her vision. She couldn't breathe. "Cinder!" She searched the room, dazed, and found Thorn scrambling out from behind a toppled table with his hands still latched behind his back. He collapsed to his knees beside the bench. "Come on! The cuffs!" Her lungs burned, her eyes stung. She was hyperventilating. I killed her, she stammered. What? I killed. She was. This is not the time to go crazy, Cinder. You don't understand. It was me. I. Thorn threw himself at her, his forehead hitting hers so hard she yelped and fell back onto the bench. Pull yourself together and help me unlock these things. She grabbed onto the table and hauled herself back up. Head aching, she blinked at Thorn, then at the officer who lay slumped against the wall, neck dangling at an odd angle. Her brain struggling to grasp onto reality, she lurched forward, dragging Thorn with her through the toppled chairs. Crouching beside the first fallen officer, she grabbed his arm and held up his wrist. Thorn twisted his hands toward her, and the cuff blinked and fell open. Cinder dropped the limp hand and stood. She bolted for the door, but something grabbed her ponytail and hauled her backward. She cried out, falling onto a table. Glass bottles shattered beneath her, water and alcohol soaking into the back of her shirt. The crazed man hovered over her, leering. Blood was dripping out from his lips and his bullet wounds, but he hardly seemed to notice. Cinder tried to scramble backward, but she slipped, a shard of glass slicing through her palm. She gasped. I would ask what brought you to Little Rio, France, but I think I already know. He smiled, but it was haunting and unnatural that the jutting canine slipped with blood. So sad for you that we found the old lady first, and now my pack has you both. I wonder what my reward will be when I bring your leftover pieces to my queen in a plastic box. Thorn roared and heaved a chair upward, breaking it over the man's back. The man spun around and Cinder used the distraction to roll off the table. She collapsed to the floor, looking up just as the man buried his teeth in Thorn's arm. A scream. Thorn! The man pulled away, chin dripping with blood, and let Thorn collapse to his knees. His eyes glinted. Your turn. He took two sauntering steps toward her. Cinder upended the table, creating a blockade between them, but he kicked it aside with a laugh. Standing, she raised her hand and fired a tranquilizer dart into his chest. He snarled and yanked the dart out like a minor annoyance. Cinder backed away. Tripping over a fallen chair, she cried out and collapsed backward onto the warm, unmoving body of the officer who had managed to get off two useless bullets. The man grinned sickeningly, then paused again, paling. His cruel smile vanished, and with one more step he crashed face first on the ground. Cinder stared, stomach in knots, at his still form amid the wreckage. When he didn't move, she dared to glance at the dead officer whose blood was leaking onto her collarbone. Rolling off him, she grabbed the gun that had been tossed onto the floor and shoved herself backward to her feet. She seized Thorn's elbow and stuffed the gun into his hand. He moaned in pain but didn't fight her as she hauled him to his feet and shoved him toward the door. Rushing back to the booth, Cinder tucked the power cell under her arm before running after him. The street was chaos, people screaming and barreling out of the buildings and crying hysterically. Cinder spotted the two policemen who had been inspecting the podship, trying to direct a fleeing crowd. A window shattered as a man threw himself through the glass, the creepy man from the parts store, and tackled one of the police in the same movement, his jaws latched onto the officer's neck. Nausea welled up in Cinder as the maniac released the officer and turned his bloodied face up to the sky. He howled, a long, proud, ominous howl. Cinder's dart caught him in the neck, silencing him. He had time to turn his glower on her before he collapsed onto his side. It didn't seem to matter. As Cinder and Thorn ran for their abandoned podship, the man's howl was picked up by another. And another, half a dozen unearthly calls being sent up in every direction to greet the rising moon. Chapter 37. What was that? Thorn yelled as he peeled the podship off the street, flying lower and much faster than regulations suggested. They fled over the patchwork of crops that surrounded the town of Ryu. Cinder shook her head, still panting. They were lunar. He mentioned his queen. Thorn slammed his palm down on the pod ship's control board, cursing. I know lunars are supposed to have some screws loose, no offense, but those men were psychotic. He practically gnawed my arm off, and this is my favorite jacket. Cinder glanced over at Thorn, but his injured shoulder was the one turned away from her. She could, however, make out a red welt where he pounded his forehead into hers in order to snap her from her delirium. She pressed her cool metal fingers to her own forehead, which was starting to throb, and noticed a skein of text in her vision that she'd been too terrified and distracted to notice before. Where are you? Eco's panicking. Thorn swerved around an abandoned tractor. I forgot about the police. Is my ship all right? Hold on. Sick to her stomach at the swerving, Cinder gripped her harness and called up a new comm. On our way. Are the police still there? Eco's response was almost instantaneous. No, they stuck a tracking device to the bottom of the ship and left. Something about a disturbance in Ryu. I'm looking at the net screens now. Cinder, are you seeing this? She gulped but didn't answer. The police are gone. They left a tracker. Well, that's predictable. Thorn swooped down, catching the tip of a windmill on the landing gear. Cinder saw the Rampion only a few miles off, a large gray splotch amid the crops, barely discernible in the night. Eco, open the pod ship dock. By the time the pod dipped toward the Rampion, the dock was wide open. Cinder squeezed her eyes shut, bracing herself against the seat as Thorn dove toward it too fast. But he released the thrusters just in time, and soon they were coming to a very rocky sudden stop. The pod ship shuddered and died. Cinder had tumbled out of the side door before the lights faded. Eco, where's the tracker? Star, Cinder, where have you been? What is going on out there? No time. The tracker. It's under the starboard landing gear. I'll get it, said Thorn, marching toward the wide open doors. Eco, seal the dock as soon as I'm out, then open the main hatch. Cinder, get that power cell installed. He jumped down off the dock, and Cinder heard a squelch of mud when he landed. A moment later, the interlocking doors began to slide shut. Wait! The doors froze, leaving a space not larger than Cinder's pounding head between them. What? Cried Eco. I thought he was out. Did I crush him? No, he's fine. I just have to do something. Chewing on her lip, she knelt on one knee, yanking her pant leg up. She unlatched the compartment to her prosthetic leg and found two small chips lodged in the mess of bundled wire, the direct communication chip glittering with its peculiar iridescence, and Peony's ID chip, still caked with dried blood. Those officers had tracked her through Peony's chip, and she wouldn't have been surprised if Lavanna's minions had found her the same way. I'm so stupid, she muttered, prying the chip loose. Her heart suddenly clamped up, but she did her best to ignore it as she brushed a quick kiss against the ID chip and threw it out into the field. It glinted once with moonlight before vanishing in the dark. All right. You can close the doors now. As the doors clanged shut, she threw herself toward the pod ship and pulled the power cell off the floorboard. The engine room glowed with red emergency lights. Her retina display had already pulled up the plans by the time she slithered on her stomach to the ship's exterior corner and unbolted the old power cell. When she yanked it free, the whole ship went black. She cursed to herself. Cinder! Came Thorn's distraught scream from somewhere overhead. Cinder flicked on her flashlight and tore off the protective packaging of the new cell, her breaths coming in short, panic gasps. It didn't take long for the engine room to grow stifling hot without the cooling system. She plugged a cable into the cell's outlet, then bolted it to the engine. Already she was forgetting how she ever managed to survive without the screwdriver in her new hand as she secured the cell to the wall. The overlaid blueprint on her vision zoomed in as she connected the delicate wires. Gulping, she punched the restart code into the mainframe. The engine hummed, grew louder, and soon purred like a contented cat. The red lights flickered back on and were just as quickly replaced with bright whites. "Eco?" The response was almost instantaneous. "What just happened? Why won't anyone tell me what's going on?" Exhaling, Cinder dropped to her stomach and wriggled back toward the door. She grasped the ladder rungs that led to the ship's main level, calling out, "Ready for takeoff!" No sooner had the words left than the combustors flared beneath her and the ship lurched up off the ground. Cinder screamed and grasped the ladder, clinging tight to it as the rampion hovered momentarily before shooting up into the sky, away from the destruction happening in Michel Benoit's beautiful hometown. When they reached orbit again, Cinder found Thorne in the cockpit, slumped in his chair, with both arms draped toward the floor. "We should clean our wounds," she said, seeing the dark spot of blood on his shoulder. Thorne nodded without facing her. "Yeah, I definitely don't want to catch whatever he had." Her right leg shaking under her own weight, Cinder made her way awkwardly into the med bay, grateful she had the forethought to clear the crates away from it, and found an assortment of bandages and ointments. "Nice takeoff back there," she said when she joined Thorne in the cockpit. "Captain," he grunted, sulking, as Cinder used her embedded knife to cut open his sticky sleeve. "How does it feel?" she asked, examining the bite marks on his arm. "Like I was bit by a feral dog." "Are you lightheaded? Woozy? You lost a lot of blood." "I'm fine," he said, glowering. "Pretty upset about my jacket. It could have been a lot worse." She ripped off a long band of medical tape. "I could have used you as a human shield, like that officer." Her voice hiccuped on the last word. A headache was coming on, starting in her desert dry eyes, as she wrapped a bandage around Thorne's arm and taped it. "What happened?" She shook her head and peered down at the gash in her palm. "I don't know," she said, awkwardly wrapping the tape around it too. "Cinder? I didn't mean to." She slumped back in her own chair. She felt sick, remembering the dead, blank stare of the woman as she put herself between Cinder and that man. "I just panicked, and the next thing I knew, she was there in front of me. I didn't even think. I didn't try. It just happened." She shoved herself out of the chair and marched out into the cargo bay, needing room to breathe, to move, to think. "This is exactly what I was talking about, having this gift. It's turning me into a monster, just like those men. Just like Lavanna." She rubbed her temples, biting back her next confession. Maybe it wasn't just being lunar. Maybe it ran in her blood. Maybe she was just like her aunt, just like her mother, who had been no better. "Or maybe," Thorne said, "it was an accident, and you're still learning." "An accident?" She spun around. "I killed a woman." Thorne held up a finger. "No. That blood-sucking, howling wolfman killed her. Cinder, you were scared. You didn't know what you were doing. He was coming after me, and I just used her." "And do you think he would have left the rest of us alone once he had you?" Cinder clamped her jaw shut, stomach churning. "I get that you feel like it was your fault, but let's try to put some of the blame where it belongs here." Cinder frowned at Thorne. But she was seeing that man again, with his haunting blue eyes and sick smile. "They have Michel Benoit," she shuddered, "and that's my fault, too. They're looking for me." "Now what are you rambling about?" "He knew that's why we came to Ryu, but he said they'd already found her. The old lady, he said, but they only came after her because they're trying to find me." Thorne pulled a palm down his face. "Cinder, you're being delusional. Michel Benoit housed Princess Celine. If they tracked her down, that's why. It has nothing to do with you." She gulped, her entire body shaking. "She might still be alive. We have to find her." Since neither of you will tell me anything, said Iku, her voice taut, I'll just have to guess. Were you by chance attacked by men who fought like starved wild animals? Thorn and Cinder traded glances. Cinder noticed that the cargo bay had grown abnormally warm during her tirade. Good guess, said Thorn. They're talking about it all over the news feeds, said Iku. It's not just in France. It's happening all over the world. Every country in the Union. Earth is under attack. Chapter 38. Howls filled the theater's basement. From the corner of her bed, in the cells near darkness, Scarlet held her breath and listened. The lonesome cries were muffled and distant, somewhere out on the streets. But they must have been loud indeed to reach all the way to her dungeon. And there seemed to be dozens of them, animals seeking one another in the night, eerie and haunting. There shouldn't be wild animals in the city. Peeling herself off the bed, Scarlet crept toward the bars. A light filtered down the hallway from the stairs that led up to the stage, but it was so faint that she could barely make out the iron bars over her own door. She peered down the corridor. No movement. No sound. An exit sign that probably hadn't been lit up in 100 years. She peered the other direction. Only blackness. She had the sinking sensation of being trapped all alone, of being left to die in this underground prison. Another howl echoed up, louder this time, though still stifled, perhaps on the street just outside the theater. Scarlet slipped her tongue over her lips. Hello? She started tentatively. When there was no response, not even a distant howl, she tried again, louder. Is anyone out there? She shut her eyes to listen. No footsteps. I'm hungry. No shuffling. I need to use the bathroom. No voices. I'm going to escape now. But no one cared. She was alone. She squeezed the bar, wondering if it was a trap. Perhaps they were luring her into a false security, testing her to see what she would do. Perhaps they wanted her to try to escape so they could use it against her. Or perhaps, just perhaps, Wolf really had meant to help her. She snarled. If it wasn't for him, she wouldn't be in this mess to begin with. If he told her the truth and explained to her what was going on, she would have come up with another plan to get her grandma out, rather than be led like a lamb to the feast. The joints in her fingers started to burn from clenching the bars too tight. Then, from the hollowness of the basement, she heard her name, weak and uncertain, posed as a delirious question. Scarlet? Stomach clenching, Scarlet pushed her face into the bars, their coldness squeezing her cheekbones. Hello? She started to shake as she waited. Scarlet? Grandmare! Grandmare! The voice went silent as if speaking had drained it. Scarlet thrust herself away from the barred door and ran back to the bed, claiming the small chip she tucked beneath the mattress. She returned to the door, desperate, pleading, hoping. If Wolf had tricked her about this, she reached through the bar and flicked the chip across the scanner. It chimed, the same sickeningly cheerful chime it had given when her guards brought her food. A sound she had despised until this moment. The bars swung open without resistance. Scarlet lingered in the open doorway, her pulse racing. Again she found herself straining to hear any sounds of her guards, but the opera house seemed abandoned. She stumbled away from the stairwell into the blackness of the hallway. Her hands on the walls to either side were her only guides. When she came to another iron-barred door, she paused and leaned against the opening. Grandmare? Each cell was empty. 3, 4, 5 cells, all empty. Grandmare, she whispered. At the 6th door, a whimper. Scarlet? Grandmare? She dropped the chip in her excitement and immediately fell to the floor in search of it. Grandmare, it's all right. I'm here. I'm going to get you. Her fingers found the chip, and she whipped it up before the scanner. A wash of release covered her when it chimed, although a pained, terrified sound came from her grandmother upon hearing it. Scarlet yanked the bars open, and pushed into the cell, not bothering to stay unless she accidentally tripped over her grandmother in the darkness. The cell was rank with the stench of urine and sweat and old stale air. "Grandmare!" She found her huddled on the gritty stone ground against the back wall. "Grandmare? Far? How? It's me. I'm here. I'm going to get you out of here." Her words dissolved into sobs, and she grasped her grandma's frail arms, pulling her into an embrace. Her grandma cried out an awful, pitiful sound that cut through Scarlet's ears. She gasped and laid her back down. "Don't," her grandma whimpered, her body sliding limply to the ground. "Oh, Scar, you shouldn't be here. You shouldn't be here. I can't stand you being here. Scarlet." She started crying, choking wet sobs burbling up from her. Scarlet hovered over her grandma's body, fear ripping every muscle. She couldn't remember hearing her grandmother cry before. "What did they do to you?" she whispered, drawing her hands over her grandmother's shoulders. Beneath a tin, tattered shirt, there were lumps of bandages and something damp and sticky. Biting back her own tears, she traced her grandmother's chest and ribs. The bandages were everywhere. She stroked the woman's arms and hands. Her hands were shaped more like clubs now, so covered in bandages. "No, don't touch them." Her grandma tried to pull away, but her limbs only twitched uncontrollably. As tenderly as she could, Scarlet ran her thumb over her grandma's hands. Hot tears slipped down her cheeks. "What did they do to you? Scar, you have to get out of here." Each word a struggle until she could barely talk, barely breathe. Scarlet knelt over her, resting her head on her grandma's breast and stroking the sticky hair off her brow. "It's going to be all right. I'm going to get you out of here, and we're going to go to the hospital, and you're going to be fine. You're going to be fine." She forced herself to sit up. "Can you walk? Have they done anything to your legs?" "I can't walk. I can't move. You have to leave me here, Scarlet. You have to get out." "I'm not leaving you. They've all left, Grandmare. We have time. We just need to figure out a way. I can carry you." Tears dripped off Scarlet's chin. "Come here, my love. Come closer." Scarlet swiped at her nose and buried her face against her grandma's neck. Arms tried to encircle her, but only served to beat weakly against her sides. "I didn't want to involve you in this. I'm so sorry. Grandmare." "Hush, listen. I need you to do something for me. Something important." She shook her head. "Stop. You're going to be all right. Listen to me, Scarlet." Even her grandmother's faint voice seemed to drop. "Princess Selene is alive." Scarlet squeezed her eyes shut. "Stop talking, please. Save your strength. She went to live in the Eastern Commonwealth with a family by the name of Lynn, a man named Lynn Garin." A sad, frustrated sigh. "I know, Grandmare. I know you kept her, and I know you gave her to a man in the Commonwealth. But it doesn't matter anymore. It's not your problem anymore. I'm going to get you out of here, and I'll keep you safe." "No, darling. You must find her. She'll be a teenager now, a cyborg." Scarlet blinked, wishing she could see her grandmother in the blackness. "A cyborg? Unless she changed her name, she's called Cinder now." The name struck a chord of familiarity in the back of Scarlet's mind, but her brain was too clouded to pinpoint it. "Grandma, please stop talking. I have to. You must find her. Logan and Garin are the only ones who know, and if the Queen found me, she could find them. Someone must tell the girl who she is. Someone must find her. You must find her." Scarlet shook her head. "I don't care about the stupid princess. I care about you. I'm going to protect you." "I can't go with you." Her padded hands rubbed against Scarlet's arms. "Please, Scarlet, she could make all the difference." Scarlet shrank down. "She'll be just a teenager," she managed between her renewed sobs. "What can she do?" She remembered them, the name. The news feeds flashed through her thoughts. A girl running down palace steps, falling, landing in a heap on a gravel path. Lynn Cinder, a teenager, a cyborg, a lunar. She gulped. So Levana had already found the girl, found, but lost her again. It doesn't matter, she murmured, laying her head against her grandma's chest. It's not our problem. I'm going to get you out of here. We're going to get away. Her mind desperately searched for a way they could escape together. Something to use as a stretcher, or a wheelchair, or... But there was nothing. Nothing that could make it up the stairs. Nothing she could carry. Nothing her grandma could endure. Her heart broke, the pain of it pushing a wall out of her throat. She couldn't leave her like this. She couldn't let them hurt her anymore. My sweet girl. She clamped her eyes shut, pushing out two more hot tears. Granny, who is Logan Tanner? Her grandma brushed a light kiss against Scarlett's forehead. He's a good man, Scarlett. He would have loved you. I hope you'll meet him someday. Tell him hello for me. Tell him goodbye. A sob cut through Scarlett's heart. Her grandma's shirt was soaked through with her tears. She couldn't bring herself to tell her that Logan Tanner was dead, had gone crazy, had killed himself, her grandfather. I love you, Grandmare. You're everything to me. The heavy bandaged limbs stroked her knees. I love you, too, my brave, stubborn girl. She sniffed and vowed to herself that she would stay until morning. She would stay forever. She wouldn't abandon her. If her captors came back, they would find them together, kill them together if they must. She would never leave her again. The vow was made, the promise determined, when she heard footsteps echoing down the corridor. Chapter 39. Hunkering down over her grandmother, Scarlett turned toward the hallway. Old wires hummed overhead, and pale light flooded the cell. The door still stood open. Bars casting skeletal shadows along the floor. Her eyes adjusted slowly. She held her breath, listening, but the footsteps had stopped. Still, someone was there. Someone was coming. Her grandmother's bandaged hand slipped into hers, and she turned back. Her gut clamped. Streaks of dried blood were on the weathered face. Her hair was tangled and matted. She was little more than a wasted skeleton now. Though her brown eyes were still strong, still vibrant, still filled with more love than was kept in all of the rest of the world. Ron, she whispered. Scarlett shook her head. I'm not leaving you. This is not your fight. Run, Scarlett, now! Footsteps again, growing closer. Clenching her jaw, Scarlett pulled herself onto shaking legs and faced the door. Her heart was galloping, waiting as the steps grew louder. Maybe it was Wolf, come to help her, to help them. She was dizzy from the fluttering of her pulse, unable to believe that she wanted to see him again, after everything he'd done to her. But he'd given her the chip, and he was strong, strong enough to carry her grandmother. If it was Wolf returned for her, they'd be saved. She saw the shadow cross the floor before the man stepped into the threshold. It was Ran, and he was smiling. Scarlett gulped and solidified her knees, determined not to show her fear. But there was something different about Ran now. His eyes were no longer merely ruthless. Now they were hungry, peering at Scarlett like she was a treat, one he'd been looking forward to for a long time. Ah, little fox, and just how did you get out of your cell? A shudder ripped through her. Leave my granddaughter alone. Her grandmother's raspy voice had gained an ounce of strength. She stirred, trying to sit up. Scarlett dropped beside her, squeezed her grandmother's hand. Grandmare, no, don't. I remember you. Michelle stared at Ran. You were with the ones who came for me. Grandmare. Ran chuckled. A sharp memory you have for such an ancient thing. Don't worry about him, Scarlett, said Michelle. He is only the Omega. He must have been left behind because he is too weak to join the battle. Rand snarled, baring his jutting canines, and Scarlet shrank back. "We stayed behind," he growled, "because I have unfinished business here." His eyes flashed, practically glowing. There was nothing but hatred inside them, fiery and unrestrained. Scarlet shifted so that her body better covered her grandmother. "You are nothing," Michelle said, her flashes dripping from exhaustion. Terror clutched at Scarlet's heart. "Nothing but a puppet for that thaumaturge. We've taken away your gift and turned you all into monsters. But even with all the strength, all the senses, all the bloodlust, you remain the lowest of your peers, and you always will be." Scarlet's mind whirred, wanting the conversation to end, wanting her grandmother to stop goading him, knowing it made no difference. There was murder on Rand's face. A rough laugh burst out of him. His hands gripped the door jamb to either side, entirely blocking the exit. "You're wrong, you old hag. You know so much. You must know what becomes of a pack member who kills his alpha." He didn't wait for her response. "He takes his alpha's place." His cheeks dimpled. "And I found that my brother, my alpha, has a weakness." His words slipped off as his attention found Scarlet again. "You are a naive young man," her grandmother coughed. "You are weak. You will never be more than a lowly omega. Even I can see that." Scarlet hissed. She could see the fury building inside Rand, feel the anger rolling off him. "Grandmare!" Then it became obvious what her grandmother was trying to do. "No, she doesn't mean it." She despised herself for pleading, but couldn't care. "She's old. She's delirious. Just leave her." Fuming into the cell, Rand snatched Scarlet up by her hair and pried her away from her grandmother. She shrieked, clawing at his forearm, but he tossed her back into the corner. "No!" Her grandma screamed in pain as Rand lifted her by the throat. In a blink, she was pinned against the wall, too weak to flail, too fight, to put up any resistance. "Leave her alone!" Scarlet scrambled up and jumped onto Rand's back, locking her elbows around his neck, squeezing with all her might. When Rand didn't even flinch, she clawed at him, aiming for his eye sockets. Rand howled and dropped her grandmother into a heap, then flung Scarlet off his back. She collapsed against the wall, but she verily felt the impact, her attention falling on her grandmother's limp, bandaged form. "Grandmare!" Their gazes met, and she could see in an instant that her grandmother would not be moving her again. Her dry lips managed to stammer, but nothing followed. Her eyes lingered open, eerily emptied. Scarlet shoved herself off the wall, but Rand was there first, his massive form crouching over her grandmother's body, scooping one hand beneath her back so that her head fell heavily onto the hard floor. Like a starved animal having brought down his first kill, Rand leaned over and clamped his jaws over Michelle's neck. Scarlet screamed and fell backward. The world spun with the sight of blood, and Rand crouched on all fours. Her grandmother's accusation echoed back to her. "They've turned you all into monsters." Still in shock, she forced her face away and rolled onto her side. Her stomach heaved, but there was nothing inside her but bile and saliva. She tasted iron and acid and blood and realized she'd bitten her tongue when Rand had thrown her at the wall. But there was no pain, only hollowness and horror and a dark cloud creeping over her. She was not here. This was not happening. Stomach burning from trying to push up food that wasn't there, she crawled toward the far wall, putting as much distance between her and Rand as she could. Rand and her grandmother. Her hand fell onto the streak of light from the hallway. Her skin was sickly pale. She was trembling. "Run!" Lifting her head, she could see the start of a stairwell at the end of the hallway. Beside it, a painted sign long since faded. "To stage. Run!" Her brain struggled to find the meaning of the words. "To stage. Stage. Stage." Her grandmother's last words. "Run!" Reaching forward, she wrapped her fingers around the bars of the cell and used them as leverage. straining to pull herself up, to stand, to push forward, into the hallway, into the light. Her legs felt non-existent at first, and she hobbled to the bottom of the stairs. But as she climbed, she found strength in them. She pushed forward. She ran. A closed door loomed at the top of the stairs, an old wooden door not even equipped with an ID scanner. She creaked when she shoved it open. Then footsteps below, coming for her. Scarlet emerged backstage. Old pillars stood clustered together to her right, and a maze of fake stone walls and painted trees filled the shadows to her left. The door slammed behind her, and she ran into the wooden forest, grabbing a wrought iron candelabra. She lifted it in both hands and waited, feet braced. Ran burst through the door, chin covered in blood. Scarlet swung as hard as she could. A roar was wrenched out of her as the iron bar collided with Rand's skull. He cried out and stumbled back into the curtain. He tripped on the fabric and fell backward. Scarlet thrust the candelabra at him. Not sure she had the strength to heft it again, she heard fabric ripping, but she was already gone, dodging between the set pieces, scanning the creaking wooden floorboards as she lunged over coiled, dusty power cords and toppled spotlights. She stumbled onto the stage, the empty expanse of wooden floorboards and trapdoors, and half-jumped, half-fell into the phantom orchestra. Ignoring a jolt of pain that burned across her knee, she shoved the music stands aside and bolted into the auditorium. Footsteps thumped across the stage behind her, inhumanly fast. The rows of empty chairs flashed by, and all she could see was the door looming ahead. He grabbed her hood. She let him pull her back, use the momentum to swing around, and aim her knee for his groin. He let out a cry of pain and staggered. Scarlet darted through the crumbling marble arches, past the cherubs with their broken arms, past the shattered chandeliers and broken tile floors. She flew down the marble stairs, focusing on the huge doors that would lead to the street. If only she could get out of there, into public, into the real world. As she hit the lobby floor, the silhouette of another man moved across the exit. Her feet skidded to a stop, landing her in the square of pale sunlight from the hole in the ceiling. Pivoting, she ran for the other staircase, the stairs that went back down into the depths of the opera house. Above, a door slammed shut, and there were footsteps pounding, and she couldn't tell if it was one set of footsteps or two. Sweat coated the back of her shirt. Her legs ached, her burst of adrenaline fading. She rounded a corner and barreled into darkness. The main room that had once been used for important guests of the opera house and a series of doors and hallways led to every corner of the sublevel. Scarlet knew the halls to the right would take her back to the prison cells, so she veered left. A drained fountain basin filled the space between the two stairways that led to the upper level. The bronze statue of a half-dressed maiden lingered in an alcove atop a pedestal, one of the few statues that seemed to have survived so many years of neglect. Scarlet ran for the opposite staircase, wondering if going back up to the lobby would be suicide, and yet knowing that to be trapped down here was no alternative. She reached the bottom of the stairs, and her foot hit the low ledge of the fountain. She stumbled, crying out. Rand was on her before she hit the ground. Fingernails dug into her shoulder, flipping her onto her back amid the tiny broken tiles of the dry basin. She peered up into his glowing eyes, the eyes of a madman, of a murderer, and she remembered Wolf on stage at the street fight. Fear clamped her throat shut, strangling a scream. He gripped her shirt and lifted her from the ground. She grabbed his wrist, but was too petrified to fight as he brought her face toward his. Scarlet nearly gagged on the stench of his breath, like rotten meat and blood. So much blood. Her grandmother's. If it wasn't such a repulsive thought, I might take advantage of you here, now that we're all alone, he said, and Scarlet shuddered. Just to see the look on my brother's face when I told him about it. With a roar, he threw her at the statue. Her back collided with the bronze pedestal, and pain exploded through her head, knocking the wind from her. She collapsed to the ground, grasping her chest, trying to draw air back into her lungs. Rand crouched before her, ready to spring. His tongue swiped out over his canines, coating them with strings of saliva. Her stomach lurched. She kicked at the ground in an attempt to push herself into the small space between the statue and the wall, to disappear, to hide. He sprang. She cowered against the wall, but the impact didn't come. Scarlet heard a battle cry, followed by a heavy thud. Snarling, she lowered her trembling arms. In the center of the cavern, two forms tangled with each other, jaws snapping, blood dripping over taut muscles. Eyesight blurring, she managed to ease in a breath, glad to feel her chest expand. Reaching overhead, she gripped the statue and tried to pull herself up, but the muscles in her back screamed at her. Clenching her jaw, she worked on tucking her legs under her and battled against the pain until she could stand, panting and sweating against the bronze goddess. If she could just get away before the brawl was over. Rand pulled the other man into a headlock. The opponent's glowing emerald eyes pierced Scarlet for one heart-stopping moment before he flipped Rand over his head. The ground vibrated from the impact, but Scarlet barely felt it. Wolf! It was Wolf! Chapter 40. Rand rebounded onto his feet, and he and Wolf sprang apart, each straining against unburned energy. Scarlet could almost see it, simmering and seething beneath their skin. Wolf was covered in gashes and blood, but he didn't seem to notice as he stood slightly hunched, hands flexing. Rand bared his fangs. "Return to your post, Rand," Wolf said with a snarl. "This one is mine." Rand snorted in disgust. "And let you embarrass me, embarrass our family, with all your newfound sympathy? You're a disgrace." He spat a glob of blood onto the broken concrete. "Our mission is to kill. Now stand aside so I might kill her, if you're not willing to do it yourself." Scarlet glanced behind her. The staircase was low enough that she could climb over the railing, but her body ached just thinking about it. Trying to shake off the helplessness, she struggled to crawl to the edge of the fountain. "She is mine," Wolf repeated, his voice tinged with a low growl. "I do not want to fight you over a human, brother," Rand said, though the loathing etched onto his face made the endearment sound like a joke. "Then you will leave her. She was left under my jurisdiction. You should not have abandoned your post to come for her." "She is mine!" Wolf's temper flared, and he swiped at the nearest candelabra, tearing the bronze arm from the wall. Scarlet ducked as it crashed to the floor, sending wax candlesticks hurtling into the fountain's basin. They both remained in their hunched stances, panting, glaring. Finally, Rand snarled, "And you've made your choice." He pounced. Wolf batted him from the air with an open palm, swiping him down onto the fountain wall. Rand landed with a yelp, but quickly rolled back onto his feet. Wolf lunged, digging his teeth into Rand's forearm. With a cry of pain, Rand swiped his sharp nails down Wolf's chest, leaving crimson gouges. Unlocking his jaw, Wolf backhanded Rand across the face, sending him reeling into the fountain statue. Scarlet screamed and stumbled back against a column at the base of the stairs. Rand attacked again, and Wolf, expectant, grasped him by the neck and used the momentum to throw him overhead. Rand rolled gracefully onto his feet. They were both panting, blood soaking through their shredded clothes. They paced, waiting, hunting for weaknesses. Again, Rand made the first move. He threw his whole weight at Wolf, tackling him to the ground. His jaws went for the neck, snapping, but Wolf held him off, hands wrapped around his throat. He grunted beneath Rand's weight, struggling to avoid the dripping fangs, when Rand dug his fist into Wolf's shoulder, the bullet wound from Scarlet's gun. Howling, Wolf curled his legs to gain purchase and shoved Ran off with a kick to the stomach. Ran rolled away, and they both staggered to their feet again. Scarlet could see their energy dissolving as they stood, wobbling, gazes flashing murder. Neither moved to cover their wounds. Ran swiped a bare arm across his mouth, streaking his chin with blood. Wolf crouched and sprang, shoving Ran onto his back and landing on top of him, a fist clawed for him. Wolf ducked, catching the brunt of the damage on his ear, pushing his opponent into the marble. Wolf raised his face to the ceiling and howled. Scarlet forced her way into the column, petrified. The howl resounded off the walls and through her skull and joints, filling every empty space in her body. When he stopped howling, Wolf dropped down and snapped his jaw around Ran's throat. Scarlet hid behind her arms, but couldn't bring herself to look away. Blood gurgled up, coating Wolf's chin and neck, dribbling down onto the mosaic floor. Ran shook and jerked, but the struggle was quick to drain out of him. A moment later, Wolf released him, letting the dead body slump onto the ground. Reaching around the column, Scarlet grasped the stair railing and hauled herself up the flight, running, half-limping up the steps. The lobby was still deserted. Her feet splashed through the puddle in the center of the room as she ran for the doors, doors that would lead to the street, to freedom. Then she heard Wolf chasing her. She shoved through the exit. The cool evening air engulfed her as she pounded down the stairs to the empty street, already scanning the open square for help. She saw no one, no one. The door slammed open behind her before it had time to close, and she stumbled blindly across the street. In the distance, she saw a woman running into a nearby alley. Hope flashed, and Scarlet surged to her feet to move faster to fly. She suddenly felt like she could take off and soar over the concrete. If she could just reach the woman, just use her port to call for help. And then another figure appeared. Another man, his gait abnormally fast. He sped into the alley, and a moment later the woman's terrified scream screeched across the square and was cut short. A howl erupted from the same dark alley. In the distance, another howl rose up to greet it, and another, filling the twilight with bloodthirsty cries. Terror and hopelessness choked Scarlet all at once, and she fell, silt and concrete digging into her palms. Gasping, drenched with sweat, she rolled onto her back. Wolf had stopped running, but he still came for her, prowling toward her with measured, patient steps. He was panting almost as hard as she was. Somewhere off in the city, another chorus of howling started. Wolf did not join them. His attention was all for Scarlet, cold and sharp and hungry. The pain was clear. The fury was clearer. She scrambled away on her burning palms.